Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
I'm Derek Spartz.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
What is up, bosses and our Patreons? Because this is a bonus episode for you on video, all three of us. When does this happen, guys? I got Sam and Johnny on the other end. And Patreons are getting to see this early. You freebie cheapskates who don't want to give us $5 a month. You're going to have to wait for this one. But when you do actually hear this, you should head over to investlikeaboss.com. Click become a Patreon so you can see our smiling faces early. What's up, guys?
We even got dressed up for this one.
Yeah. I remember, I think we were in a studio with me and Sam in LA. And this kind of reminds me of that, even though Derek's the only one actually in a studio.
I remember that episode. That was actually right before I came here. And I was like, That was when you guys were down in like Manhattan Beach, which inside of LA, whatever, is close to me. And I was trying to get there. And for some reason, I couldn't meet you guys. And then weirdly, I was working for you a few months later.
Well, there you go. Derek's wearing a shirt that looks like he's in Thailand, and Johnny's actually in Thailand. He's got a shirt on, looks like he's in an office in California.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. Yeah, and it looks like you got the fluorescent lighting above you too, there, Johnny, or something.
Yeah, I do. I have like over ceiling lights. Am I handsome, by the way? I could turn on some more lights if I need.
I don't know that that's really gonna help.
Is that your place, Johnny, or is that a cafe?
No, it's my place. It's a rental.
Wow, looks like an upgraded. That's no slouch condo in Jomtien.
We're going to be talking about this in the episode, but I'm slowly upgrading my life.
Whoa.
I think
you went from a Motel 6 to a Motel 8.
Yeah. No more
Jared Dillon episode. Yeah. Oh, all right. Let's talk about it.
Well, Sam, you kind of had this idea, and Johnny and I just were casually talking about this idea last week when we were talking to George Camel. And then Sam like hit us up literally like an hour later with the same exact idea. It was like a weird little kismet thing. So we're like, all three of us have to hop on this. So why don't you explain what we're going to get into, Sam?
This happens a lot when I'm back in the West in entrepreneurial circles and privately, like, you know, dinners or long walks or whatever with entrepreneurial friends. The topic pretty commonly comes up. It's like, what's your number? Like, what, you know, where do you want to get to for retirement, or where do you want to get to for financial freedom? We've been talking a lot about 4% rule. Like, we haven't done an actual dedicated episode on 4% rule, but we're always talking about financial freedom and how much money you need to live. So I thought, hey, new year, it's a good time for us all to break down some numbers and actually look at what it would take, where everyone thinks they are. And I think it's a good reflection for ourselves and also the listeners. And Johnny's been kind of pounding me about my number changing, and I'm like, has it? And the quarterly updates we recorded, he was like, your number's changing, it's always going higher. And so I also wanted to dig in and see actually where my number was.
Yeah, and I wanted to rebut the last episode with my thoughts on the 4% rule being BS, or as our guest said.
Yeah.
Well, let's dig into that a little bit deeper first, because we played a little piece of it on the episode where Dave kind of went off on George Camel. And if you haven't listened to the last episode, you should definitely do so. A really good kind of just back to basics from George Camel. But then he brings up this controversy that happened literally, I think, like the week that Johnny interviewed him, and we just missed it. So Johnny and I touched on this. But if you didn't catch it, obviously, Dave Ramsey has principles that he wants his whole team to follow. And apparently George Camel did not follow those principles. And I actually have a clip here from a video that he made that caused Dave to go off on him live on his show. Why don't we check that out?
Another flaw with FIRE is that they say you can withdraw 4% of your nest egg, but you'll really need to withdraw closer to 3% if you retire that early. So look at this. If you've saved $1.5 million by your 30s, that amounts to living off $45,000 a year. We're talking about living for 55 years off one account and not depleting it. And if you withdraw 4%, there's a higher chance that money's gonna run out well before that time is up. This isn't a wet finger in the air. I don't know why wet fingers are in the air, but they are sometimes. This is just honest math. Literally, there's a site called honestmath.com, and they ran 10,000 different financial simulations to get this chart and show you these numbers. All right, so let's look at this chart. On the left side, we see years in retirement. On the top, we see the withdrawal rate. And as you can see, if you have a 30-year retirement with a 4% withdrawal rate, you're gonna have 3% of that account balance remaining 30 years later. That's kind of scary considering you're gonna retire at 30. And so a 30-year retirement means at 60, you're flat broke and you still might live another 35 or 40 years.
All right, I'm sure you guys have a lot to say on that. But before I get your responses, let's hear what Dave Ramsey had to say when this video was asked about him live during his call-in radio show. Here's what Dave had to rebut.
Okay, I'm a little confused because I don't know what the hell George is doing a 3% withdrawal rate, because that's absolutely wrong. I'm going to have to find out where that video is and get it taken down, because that's just wrong. You don't need to have a 3% withdrawal rate. That's ridiculous. Or I hope you misunderstood. I hope we didn't put out trash like that.
Was it 4 to 5%?
No, it shouldn't be 4 to 5%. It ought to be more than that. The problem is when you go down these stupid nerd rabbit holes in these Reddit threads with these morons who live in their mother's basement with a calculator, and then you put that out into the dadgum community, and then people go, I don't have enough money. It's hopeless. I'll never be able to save enough to retire. $1 million should create for you an $80,000 income, boys and girls.
So really quick recap. There's the 4% rule, which we're going to get into. George Camel was saying that's even too aggressive. You should go down to 3%. And then Dave comes back and says, what are you talking about? You should be at 8%. Johnny, you said this is your hot button subject. What do you got to say?
You know, I was really trying to listen with like a very open mind at the context of all this. So first off, the thing about the 4% rule, these calculations, these simulations, and we can link some people to some calculators later so they can see for their own numbers. But there's a, you know, first off, no one knows what's going to happen with the markets in the future. So what they do is they take, you know, historical data, and they say, okay, what are your chances of still having money left over after 30 years? And on average, for a 4% rule, you're going to be okay after 30 years, but there's a very good chance you're going to have nothing left. And Dave's kind of point, which at first, you know, I was very annoyed because his math is just wrong. If anyone, you know, dives into that, because it's almost impossible to get an 8% or higher return, especially if it's adjusted for inflation over the long run. But his point is, yeah, if you worry so much and just nerd out so much on the numbers, you're going to be so stressed and you're going to think you need $10 million to ever retire. But in reality, with $1 million, everybody should be able to retire. Whether it's being able to take out 8% forever or having adjusted, I think he didn't go into a long-term plan. But I think that's kind of his point, is $1 million is a lot of money. Like, don't aim higher than that or you'll feel like it's so high and you'll never get there.
I think one thing to note on this too is it seems like, I don't know that if Dave knew this on the show, that George Camel video, he's really speaking to people doing FIRE and retiring early, like in their 30s. Mm-hmm. And Dave is very much obviously against that. I think in his head, he's picturing someone 60 plus.
Yeah.
And with a paid off home. So, I mean, the person in the 30s probably isn't going to have that. And obviously, if you have a paid off home, you can live off a lot smaller income. I just think the context wasn't there. And it was like, old man Dave just going off on his guy that he thought he was speaking against him.
Yeah. I think what we heard from Dave, though, was, I mean, if we try to just keep it in what we heard and not the overall picture or context, I would say that's shockingly off and hurtful for people to consider, because he said income stream. He wasn't saying your portfolio should increase 8% a year. He's like income stream. So if we look at all of our collective investments and everything that we've done together over the last 7 years, we look at what's generated 8% returns over that period of time. I mean, there's not much. There's the stock market. But if you look at, like, let's just say real estate, and even in the last few years, like, look at Johnny and my portfolio over the last year, we've had a few investments that we got in for cash flow, like APH and Pier Street, that were paying 7 to 10%. Those have both gone bust, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, I mean, you could say you can easily generate 8% income stream of real estate. And historically, you'd be right, at least in U.S. Real estate market. But if you look at my real estate funds in the U.S., I had Pier Street, I'm sorry, Fundrise, which was originally paying like 9 or 10% dividend.
That dropped like a rock.
Is now down to about 3. I'm in MLG Capital that has been paying out steady 8% preferred. So that's been solid. I'm in one real estate fund that's Apex One, who's cut the dividend, the 8% guaranteed preferred down to 4%. It's now paying out 4% in most months or most quarters. And then I'm in one with Omar Khan, who's completely froze the guaranteed. Now that should get paid back at some time. But if you look at the blend of those three, none of them are, only one's paying out 8% now. So if you were fully in, if you took your $1 million and put it fully in one of those and they stop paying out dividend, what do you have to live off of? Or you're getting 4% instead of 8%, or the one fund goes, you know, liquidates and has to take a loss. So there's a number of things that can go long where 8% is by no means guaranteed. I mean, I feel way more comfortable with the 3% number. And if you look at the math historically, you know, 3% is pretty safe. 4% is fairly safe in most market conditions. But again, we're talking about 30 years. Well, all of us now are in our late 30s, right? Early 40s. So we have to be thinking at least 45 years out.
So I just pulled up honestmath.com, which is one of the apps that there's a lot of them out there. But for me, withdrawing 4% until I'm 80, which is kind of where I expect to die, the chance of me still having money left over. So there's a 20% chance I'm going to be very unlucky. I'm going to have nothing. I'm basically
Are you putting what your current net worth is and right now, John?
Yeah. So I put in my current net worth, and then I put in a 4% withdrawal rate with a 2% inflation rate going up. So it's basically giving me a little raise every year, hoping, you know, inflation's not over 2%, but even if it is, that's just what I'm getting. So I'll get a little bit more than, you know, the starting $3,333 a month kind of going forward. They give you kind of three categories. You know, you have the unlucky, medium, and lucky. So there's a 50% chance I'm going to be at 80 and I'll still have 0.6 million. I guess that's a little bit over half a million. And if, you know, there's a 20% chance, I'll either have zero or I'll have 7.5 million when I die. So really a lot of it depends on the markets. If it's making 4% on average or less, or 8% or more.
So we broke down different wealth levels for the purpose of this episode. We broke down four different scenarios for what you would do once you got to your number. So let's say your number is 1.5 million. There's different things you can do once you get to that, right? You can just simply put it into a checking account. That's one option. Like, I don't think any of us would do that, but there's certainly a lot of retired people that just have it in an account and a checking account and spend it down. And then there's a few other ways that you could invest and strategize around this number. So we should talk about those. And then we should look at some different wealth numbers. And I think we've modeled out everything from 500,000 up to 20 million. And we can talk about those. And then let's come back and we can talk about what our numbers are, specifically Derek, Johnny, and my numbers.
Hey bosses, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. The show will be right back.
Okay, so we'll keep the numbers simple. These numbers are not going to be perfect, but they're kind of just used as a guideline for you to establish what your number is. They're also based on not having any other type of income stream. So this is my number. I'm done. I'm not going to go out and side hustle or get a job or anything. So we talked about one option just to cover the four options of what you would do with your money based on what your aspirations are and your comfort level. One is you just simply put the money in a bank account and spend it down. So we're going to look at how much, if you took that strategy at the different wealth numbers, levels or the different numbers, how much you could spend down each month. The second option is a lifetime annuity. And I think for our generation, most people don't even know about these. But for older generations, these are very, very common and popular. And what it is, it's basically like a private pension. So you give your money, let's just say it's $1 million. And one thing you have to consider is, like, as you get older, you lose some of your mental faculties, right? So you don't want to have, like, when you're 85, you don't want to have complicated investments and be thinking, you know, about how to withdraw money and how much you can withdraw and stuff. Because, like, you, frankly, you just might not even be all the way there, right? So these lifetime annuities are basically transfer of risk products. and you buy them for what they will do, not for what they might do, like, for instance, the stock market. So what you do is you give them the $1 million to a company. It's basically like a certificate of deposit, except that they pay you out each month and it stays invested. So say you lock in a 4% interest rate for your life. Like, this can be a 35-year, 45-year policy. So it's accumulating interest each month, but they're also paying you out. And they calculate it based on, you know, if like you're 40, you go to them, they say, okay, insurance companies are pretty good at figuring out how long you're going to live, right? And they'll calculate how much they think you're going to, you know, you can get each month and when they think you're going to die. And then it can adjust a little bit depending on how it's going along.
And what happens if you live to like 100 years old?
I think they adjust. Like if you're healthy and 85, like, it has to adjust, or some of them don't. There's a lot of different annuity products, by the way.
So I'm assuming if you put $1 million in, you just draw that down. So when you die, nothing, like, there's nothing left, right?
Yeah.
No matter what happens.
No, in a lot of cases you do die with something left, and that's just that just goes to whoever you want to leave it to inherit it. In fact, this happened with my grandfather. He died and he left me an annuity that had like $20,000 left on it.
Okay.
And the payments just came to me.
So do you know, Sam, can you actually get 4% right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what are the kind of the fees for that?
Nothing.
There has to be fees.
There are no fees. It's like,
well, they have to get something.
It's like a bank CD. You give them your money. They're using that money to do something else, and they guarantee,
they're banking 4 or 5%. On the fact that they can get a better than a 4% return.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Over the course of 4 to 5 years, it's a beautiful product.
So right now you can get 4.5% with a, 30-year, US bond, right? A US Treasury bond. And at the end of the 30 years, you get back that entire $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you even think about doing an annuity right now when interest rates are so high?
You can lock in interest rates for longer than 30 years.
Okay.
You get paid out each month based on part of your principal plus part of the interest. So you don't have to wait for your dividends. Like, when we start looking at some of these numbers, like 5% on, or say 4% on $1 million might not be enough for you to live on each year, right? It's four grand. But if you take
40 grand, just to be clear. Yeah.
If you get, 40 grand. So if, 4 grand a month, right? But if you took part of the principal out each month plus the interest, it would probably be enough for most people to live off of, right? And again, we'll look at some of these examples in the numbers. So the idea is like, okay, I want to spend down part of this million each month, but I also want it to be invested in something conservative that I can, that accumulates interest over the course of that time.
Okay. I mean, I know, annuities is definitely something you personally use and you like. Mm-hmm. I would say most people in the FIRE community, they're a big proponent of, the standard mix of stocks and bonds.
Yeah.
Whether it's, 50-50 or a 90-10 split, depending on how old you are. I think that if I was going to retire today, I would, instead of being 90% stocks or 100% stocks and then 10% bonds, I would do the flip. I would say, I'm okay with just having, a guaranteed 4.5% bonds and then have half my money, potentially make 8% or 10% or 12% or potentially go down. And what's nice about that is when the market's up, you can sell the shares of the stocks. And when it's down, you sell the shares of the bonds, and that's kind of the whole point of riding through these waves.
Yeah, but it depends. I think, again, when we look at the numbers, it depends. Like, how you would, if you were going to just get off the grid and do the FIRE thing with $500,000 in the bank right now, versus if you had $5 million, your investing strategy would have to be different. Because if you were to go heavily in stocks with $500,000 and the market goes down 35% for 3-4 years, and you're drawing that down, it's like, oh shit, this didn't work.
So in that case, you'd be drawing down the stocks. I mean, the bonds. You leave the stocks while they're down.
The bonds. Okay. Well, let's look at some live numbers, because I think there's so many variables that go into, age and unexpected costs, family or not family, single, et cetera.
So Johnny, you're saying on like an up market year, you're selling stocks, and on a down year, you're selling bonds.
Exactly. And also, if I ever needed to make a big purchase, like a new car or something, I would wait for it to be the stocks to be up. And obviously we can't.
Not everyone has that luxury, though. I mean, if your car goes out and you need a car, you need a car.
Yeah, but it depends on how nice a car you want, right? Like if it was a down year, there's kind of a recession going, I'm not going out and buying the car I want. I'm going to buy just like, the Nissan Versa, base model was 17 grand, right? But if it was an up year, if it's like, let's say right now, where the stocks are hot, you know, they're kind of near an all-time high, then I'd be like, you know what? Yeah, I can afford a nicer, like a Lexus or a Mercedes or something. Maybe I'll get that.
Okay, so that's two of the options. One, cash in his checking account, spend it down. Second's the lifetime annuity, which I agree. I think for our generation, they're not popular. But as you get older, I think it becomes an increasingly interesting option. Number three is the 4% rule, which, like, just to summarize this, I think it's basically a guidepost. Like, here's what you should be able to do. And if things work out as they have historically, you don't run out of money, or maybe you maintain your original principal. You probably are not. Like, maybe you grow it in some situations, but it's certainly not like a perfect calculation, right? Mm-hmm. And then the fourth one would be like, I'm calling it aspirational financial independence. This would be like, hey, I want to be able to support my lifestyle completely off the passive income, but I also don't want my wealth to be going down each year. I want it to actually grow each year. So what's, like, in order to get to that number, you need to be able to invest in generally a broad portfolio, diversified portfolio that generates cash that you have access to each month. And you also are invested in enough assets that have the ability to appreciate, like stocks, properties, et cetera.
So let's actually talk about that. So I'm glad we skipped over that that first option of just leaving them all the money in the bank, because that's an absolute terrible idea. Unless, you know, interest rates happen to be, you know, 4% plus. I don't think anybody should be just leaving all their money in a bank account, in a checking account.
I'm just thinking in terms of, like, this year, if you pull your 4% and just sock that in an HYSA until you spend it for the year.
Yeah. Well, here's another benefit of just putting money in a checking account. Let's say you had $1 million, right? You wouldn't put it all in one checking account, but you might put it in four. So they're all insured and protected. You don't have to file taxes anymore. You're done. You're off the grid, man. No more taxes. No more tax filings. You're just coasting, baby.
Well, let's assume you're not in interest.
Well, yeah, because you're not getting interest.
Yeah, but that would be ridiculous. I would much rather fill out a simple.
Well, what if you're pulling it out of a Roth IRA too?
But we have to at least have it as an option, because there's a lot of grandparents out there. There might be 60, you know, people in their late 60s. Dave Ramsey, listen to this episode. He's like, I'm done. I just want to put in a checking account. 20 years. Let's go. Let's jump into the first bracket, like where I think a lot of people's aspirations start to get to. We're going to cover between 500,000 all the way up to 20 million. So the first number is 500,000. And let's look at what you can do with that based on the four approaches that we talked about. Derek, you want to jump into that one?
Yeah, sure. We can do that. So if you're at 500,000 at retirement and use the 4% rule, that's paying you $20,000 a year, or about $1,666 a month. Mm-hmm. And according to Sam's calculations, I believe these are with a 4% interest rate on a 45-year payout using an annuity, like he mentioned before, that would actually pay you close to $2,000 a month, $1,974 a month, or about $24,000 a year. So at that rate, you're getting close to $4,000 more a year using the annuity route.
Yeah. And I also threw in one more number. That's the cash spend down, which is just if you just threw it into a bank account for 45 years. And this is a huge difference. It almost doesn't even make sense. But if you simply put the 500,000 into a bank account and you divided it up over 45 years into monthly installments, it's only $925 a month. So by just putting it into the annuity policy of getting 4% a year and allowing it to accumulate over that period of time, you more than double your monthly payout.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's the whole point of, you know, taking advantage of compound interest. This is why any of this works, you know, and why we don't have to save $10 million to be able to retire. You know, everybody can do it. I mean, technically at $500,000, if you want to live in a cheap place like in Thailand or some parts of like Eastern Europe, you know, there's a lot of places you can live a decent life for 24 grand a year. All you have to do is look at what is the medium household income. And if you're at that or above, it's possible to live there like a local. Not necessarily you would want to live that life, but it is possible.
So at this level, 500,000, I think, you know, based on the lifetime annuity numbers, 24,000 a year, 2,000 a month, you basically wouldn't have any taxes on that, because you'll pay tax on the interest technically, but I think you're tax bracket might be low enough that you wouldn't even have any taxes. So you could live, you probably couldn't have a family. You could probably have a family in, you know, developing countries. You can't really afford to take losses. Like, you can't have investments go bad and have 50K or 100K, you know, go missing. So it is tight, but it's definitely if you're like, you know, retirement age, late 60s, and you're like, man, I can go coast for 20 years. You know, if you live off 20 years instead of 45, the numbers get a lot bigger. So definitely possible.
And, you know, I actually think this is a good goal for a lot of people who just are very unhappy with their current situation or their job. I think it's hard to, you know, for someone to even imagine saving up $1 million. You know, it's such a big number for anyone who right now might not have anything in the bank. But 500,000, they're like, okay, that's a doable number.
Yeah.
And what I would suggest is, no matter what your number is, just to get to the first rung and then celebrate and then ask yourself, do I really need to try to get to that second rung? Because at 500 grand, I know this isn't, you know, actual retirement, but like there's a huge difference between having, you know, needing to work a full-time job to live versus, you know, working a job that you actually enjoy doing or you don't mind doing just for some side benefits or to be able to buy stuff you like. You know, even if I was living in the US somewhere and I had 24 grand a year guaranteed, I can just work at Trader Joe's. I can work at a dog shelter. You know, I can work doing something that I actually just like, like an easy carefree job. Maybe I'll get health benefits from it.
I got your uniform for you, Johnny. I'm wearing it right now.
But like, seriously, I actually have daydreamed about that, saying, you know what? It wouldn't be that bad of a life just to be a cashier or a stock boy at Trader Joe's.
Trader Joe's would be great.
Food.
Yeah.
You know, you just like greet people all day. Like,
I mean, for mental wellness and sense of purpose, I think that's huge too. I honestly have zero interest in fully retiring because I've seen what it does to people. And usually you drop dead pretty quick after you check out.
Derek would go from 7 jobs to 0 and he would just lose it.
Like, I don't know what to do.
Too much stillness.
I'd be happy with 2 jobs.
Yeah. Also, like, not to mention nowadays, because we have all, you know, we're in a gig economy, it makes it so much easier to pick up a side gig. Like, I know a ton of people who have cool cars that they couldn't otherwise afford. And they just told themselves, you know what? I'm willing to drive Uber two days a week and just to pay off this car, just so I can have it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just was in an Uber the other day. The guy told me he only does it to go on like cool vacations and he's been going on like ridiculous trips. And him and his like friend, they like tag team and like collaborate with Uber and then they just make a travel fund. So it's just like, you know, if you can retire, it's like cool stuff like that, you know?
Yeah. That is a very good point too, because if you get yourself into a bad situation by like trying to retire early, it's not like you necessarily have to put on suit and tie and start going out like interviewing for corporate jobs where you've lost 10 years of like your edge and you have to ramp back up to like get into into the seam. It's like, no, you can just go be an Uber driver or
food delivery.
Well, and if you're racing to retire and get done early, it's probably a sign that you hate your job currently. Yeah. So maybe you should address that first.
Good point. Yeah. All right, let's jump into the second number. $1 million. So we've doubled up now, and I'll start with the first one, the cash spend down on this. If you just put $1 million into a checking account and you want to just spend it over the course of 45 years evenly, that's $1,800, basically $1,850 per month that you can spend. Now, the lifetime annuity, again, like, it's crazy how much more you get out of this by the money just being invested at 4% during that time, but you more than double it. So you have close to $4,000 a month over 45 years. $3,900 over 45 years. You get a $3,900 paycheck. You don't have to think about it. Money in the bank.
And then if you're using the 4% rule, it's a little bit less, but it's still a nice chunk of change. $3,333 a month, or about $40,000 a year. So if you just compare that to, we were at 500,000 to 1 million, obviously you double it with the cash spend down, but you more than double it with the other two. So, I mean, especially the annuity, that makes a huge difference going from 1900 to almost 4000 now.
Yeah. Also at 1 million, you get into where you can kind of take an approach of this aspirational financial independence, where at 500,000, it's going to be tight to expect to be able to grow that money and be able to live off the, you know, $1,500 a month. It's possible, but it could also get quite scary. At 1 million, your opportunity to do that is slightly better. So we modeled the aspirational financial independence off of having 3% cash on your portfolio and it growing at a net asset value of 4%. So it's kind of like a 7% annual gain, 3% in cash. So the idea is you're living off the 3% cash and you're allowing the investments to do their thing when they're growing at 4%. So what those numbers would look like on 1 million means that you can then have $30,000 a year in cash, which comes out to just over $2,000 a month. It's about $2,100 a month. And your portfolio appreciate at $40,000 a year. After 10 years of this, you can expect your money to grow from 1 million to 1.5 million while you've been living passively off of about $25,000-$30,000 a year.
So I'm gonna jump in because this is kind of where I'm at right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you added in this kind of aspirational financial independence category, because I've realized that no matter what your number is, the worst thing in the world is seeing it get drawn down. You know, it's really, you know.
Do you think you'd still feel that way at 60, Johnny?
I feel like if I was about to die, like, you know, in the next 10 years, I wouldn't care as much. But I think in at our age, especially, you know, in your 30s, 40s, like, it's hard to look at that number and to see, like, man, it's shrinking. My worth as a human is shrinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not just us. I mean, like, we've spoken to so many people and they've all had the same thought. It's not about the amount of money. It's just about, you know, like, seeing, like, nobody wants to see their life in decline, you know? And mm-hmm. when you start seeing your net worth go down, it feels weird, you know? So this is kind of where I'm at right now, where I know I can, you know, I can start drawing down, but I never do. I never sell any stocks unless it's to buy like another asset. And when I think about selling some stocks to buy a new car or something, you know, that I want, I'm like, no, I'm not going to do it. Like, I'd rather mm-hmm. keep that money invested and then use whatever money I gained from that to buy the thing, you know? So, like, for, you know, I mean, here's a very easy example is, instead of buying a $100,000 car today, I'd rather go out and buy a $10,000 car or a $20,000 car and then invest the difference. And after 7 or 8 years, that money had probably doubled if I had just put it into a stock market mm-hmm. and then in 7 years buy that car. But to be honest, in 7 years, even though now that is free money, I probably still want to allow myself to spend the $100,000 to buy the car. I could be like, oh, you know what? Mm-hmm. I can just double down again. It's a trap. It's a psychological trap, really.
Yeah. Johnny raised a really good point. I'm not sure if we heard this on the episode, but on one of our episodes, you guys may remember, but I heard this recently. It was something that Will Smith actually said. And he said, getting rich is amazing. Being rich is a mixed bag. And losing your wealth is absolutely devastating.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I thought that was like, I think that's really spot on. And I've seen this happen with some people, like James Altucher is a good example. You know, I've an entrepreneur friend that has made tens of millions and lost it all multiple times. And like, that road down is just disastrous.
Let me offer a counterpoint from our guest 2 weeks ago. Why don't I play the Jared Dillian rant? Because this is actually a good point to do that, because Johnny, sometimes you got to treat yourself. And I don't know, I'm kind of on Jared's side on this. So if you guys didn't catch this, I asked Jared what he thought about the FIRE movement, and here's what he had to say about not spending any of your assets. Can we talk about the FIRE movement and your thoughts on that? A lot of our listeners are still really involved in that, and I think it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts about that, and then we'll jump into your new book.
Well, they should all go to hell, because it's the dumbest idea of all time. Like, the FIRE movement is a terrible idea, not just practically, but philosophically. Like, the whole thing is demented. I can't believe that people do this. And the idea that for the first 15 years of your adult life, you would live in complete deprivation so that you can save 70% of your income so you can get $2 million so that you can live in deprivation the last 50 years of your life, right? So you're living in deprivation your entire life. Like, I don't think that's a good idea. What it is it's an anti-consumption movement. It really has nothing to do with saving or investing. It's an anti-consumption movement. It says that consumption is bad, consumption is evil. And the reality is that buying material things gives us happiness. Right. I mean, not the kind of happiness you would have from a marriage or a relationship with a pet or a friend or something like that. But buying material things does give us happiness. And it is unnatural to deny ourselves that happiness over an entire lifetime. The other thing is that let's say that for the first 15 years of your adult life, you are successful in saving $2 million and now you retire and you're doing whatever with your time for the next 50 years. That's a lot of stress because every time the stock market goes down 3% in a day, you're doing this mental math about, oh my God, am I going to have to go back to work? Can I make my savings last? What if we go into a bear market? Like, yes, you have all this free time, but I would think that would be the most stressful thing in the world is to sit there and watch your retirement account go up and down every day. It's a terrible idea.
Johnny, you're denying yourself happiness.
You know what? At first, I was very offended by our guest and what he said, especially when he said it. But I actually do agree with some of the things he said. Not all of it. I do 100% believe that consumerism, even though it's good for our economy, it's good for the U.S. in a whole, it's terrible for the individual person. You know, I've been very, very fortunate where I've gotten the taste of a luxury life of flying on a private jet or sitting in business class, staying in nice hotels, going out and partying, popping, Dom Perignon and nice champagne. It doesn't make anyone happy. I think it makes you temporarily happy. It's like a hit of cocaine. Mm-hmm. You know, it might even give you the illusion that you're happy, but I guarantee you that is not true happiness. Like buying crap. And you know what? I fall for this. The other day, I bought this. Can you guys see this?
It's a stuffed
it's like
animal.
A little Frenchy stuffed animal.
Yeah, Johnny splurged.
It's a little like a French bulldog with a gold chain. Like it's on my, I put it in my backpack and it's like the Louis Vuitton print. I was like, you know what? This is kind of cool. You know, I like it. I was happy when I bought it. And then like the very next day, and I'm like, why the fuck? Like, why did I waste my money buying this? This is stupid. And luckily I didn't pay, Louis Vuitton prices for it. But if I did, I'd be even more pissed.
There was a meme about buying a Cybertruck online. And it's like, all this expectation going into buying the Cybertruck, you buy it. And like the second day you're driving it, you're like, I swear a group of teenage kids just drove by and like laughing at me. And, the air doesn't shut as the door doesn't shut quite as tight as I want. And now I'm $100,000 in debt to buy it.
I just saw one the other day for the first time, and it's even uglier in person. I mean, that's a whole nother episode we get into. But
I agree with Johnny. I think the part that the bit he did on consumption, I disagree with. And I've been through all the cycles of buying tons of stuff and basically living like a monk and buying stuff at this point. You know, I like buying like nice wine, and that's pretty much it. Like even going first business class now, I don't enjoy it. Dude, I don't know if you guys have flown business class recently. Everybody, their kids and their older mother are flying business class.
It's awful. Yeah. I'd rather spend the money on a hotel than the flight. I'll just fly economy.
Kids running up and down the aisles, babies crying. My last flight, there was someone next to me watching a video on his phone on speakerphone.
Oh,
like the hell's that about, So business class, you're just setting yourself up for a bad flight because your expectations are too high. But I do agree with what he said about the 4% rule and like spending it down. For me, even ever reading about the 4% rule just gave me anxiety. It's like the number one fear in the Western world is what now? You guys know what it is?
I don't know.
No.
It's not public speaking. Public speaking is number two. The number one
is it's
your money running out before you die. Yeah. And it's not, if you think about it, it's not just about you and your comfort. It's about family and being a burden. People don't want to be 85 and be a burden to their kids and everything. Like that would just be awful, right? So any of these strategies that's like trying to guess where you're going to be at in 30 years and just have enough to squeeze by each month is crazy. Because it's going to have so much stress along the way of watching markets go up and down and stuff. So I think you have to pick a strategy and a number that's like, it's aspirational enough that you have a surplus that you're not going to have to worry about these things.
I do agree with that. I have more to say about our friend Jared here. What I did agree with him is, and I guess Bill Perkins as well with the that was zero, is there are certain things that we should spend more money on that would make us more happy. I'll give you a couple examples from my very recent life. Last weekend, I went out with our friend Kevin Shi. He took us out to, a really nice restaurant, took me to a bar afterwards. And he spent so much money in those two nights that it was kind of eye-dropping, right? Like, I don't know how much the dinner was, but it was you know, for sure $100 a head or more. Mm-hmm. Then the drinks were definitely expensive, you know, like popping, you know, champagne and all this stuff. I think the bill was like $2,000, you know, and like for a small group of guys. And I thought about it. I was like, you know what? I had a lot of fun, but I would have had just as much fun, like, you know, without all these crazy drinks and everything. Like, there's way more other ways to enjoy life than, mm-hmm. you know, spending money on, you know, $500 bottles of drinks. But yeah. The part that I did enjoy was that dinner. You know, it was really, really delicious food in a nice setting. It was stuff that I never would you know, order or eat somewhere else. It was like things like soft shell crab, you know, which I didn't think I would like, but it turns out, you know, I do like it. You know, this like really nice beef that was like super tender, you know, in a nice, you know, really nice setting. And I'm like, you know what, maybe I should allow myself to splurge on, you know, these really nice dinners more often. For like his hotel, for example, it was like $400 a night. Meanwhile, staying at a place that was $33 a night. I don't feel like I need to spend anywhere near his amount to have that kind of luxury. But I have decided that instead of living in a studio apartment for next month, I'm going to actually upgrade to one bedroom because...
Whoa, Johnny.
Yeah, I know. It was literally what he talked about. He said, you know, I booked the studio because I'm like, that's all I actually need. I can be a minimalist. I can be anti-consumerism. I can just get the studio. I still get the same pool, still get the same facilities, the same area. I'm only one person. But now I've decided, you know what? Because I can't afford it and it's not going to affect my budget by very much, I should allow myself that extra comfort of having the separation.
Mm. Johnny's reaching peak spending years. I think mid-40s is peak spending years. And then it starts to tail off as you get into your mid-50s and then it goes down. All right, let's run through some more of the numbers. We got a few more numbers to go through. We can kind of get through these a little bit quicker. So the next level up is 2 million, so double from the last level of 1 million. And running through a couple of the numbers there, at $2 million, your cash spend down, if you just put it in a checking account, for 45 years is $3,700. But if you're a little bit smarter, a little bit wiser, and you hand over the money to a lifetime annuity policy, that doubles to $7,900, which starts to become meaningful money if you have a family or you live in the West or you want to have a little bit more of a plush retirement.
Sam, did you get a job at an annuity company? Because I feel like you're just pushing them.
I think Stan kicks back 10% on them.
Hey, 7-8 years. No, I've had annuities now for 8 or 9 years. And the more I get into... Like this last year, you realized all these alternative investments and all the paperwork and, you know, 10 years of Mt. Gox bankruptcy courts and probably going to do the same with Pier Street and trying to get my money out of these wine investments and stuff. I'm just like, simple, simple, simple. What's my simplest investment? Annuities. They're literally simple. They're even more simple than certificates of deposit and safer and tax deferred. So there's a lot going on there.
So I agree with most of that. And actually, I too, I'm like, you know what? I don't want to deal with all these kind of individual startup investment companies anymore. I don't see how it's any safer than putting a CD. A CD should be way safer.
It's not any safer. Historically, insurance companies are safer than banks. And they know that just through going back through the Great Depression and through the last 100 years, less insurance companies have gone bankrupt than banks. So more money was tied up and or lost in banks than insurance companies.
Yeah, okay. But I beg to argue that.
You argue what, the history?
I mean, either way, you should be insured, right? Even though the process to collect the insurance is probably awful.
Yeah. I mean, but to Johnny's point, it's like, it's uncomfortable because these are not our, you know, these are not our investments. These are like our parents' investments. And when you look up these insurance companies, it's like, I've never heard of these, right? Whereas like, all right, Bank of America, or even like Marcus is owned by Goldman Sachs. And, you know, it is a little uncomfortable to put any of this in a single account or single investment, right? So, and full disclosure, we get zero kickback from Stan the Annuity Man or any of these other companies we're talking about.
And I will admit, I haven't dug into annuities, you know, completely. I don't have any experience with it because I don't personally invest in them, but I'm glad that you like them. And I know you've done your homework, but for me, I would much rather see a similar return in a 30-year, you know, U.S. Treasury that I know is guaranteed and safe than to risk putting in one company that who knows what might happen. Like, and It sounds like it hasn't happened yet, knock on wood. Hopefully it never happens. But I would much rather trust the U.S. Treasury or even a bank, because if a bank fails, most likely, you know, the FDIC will pay it back. You know, the government might even bail it out. But if insurance companies start collapsing, I don't think the government's going to step in.
I mean, just the caveat that the issue there is structure. So if you're in a 30-year treasury or in your bank CD, you can get the interest, I guess, monthly or annually, but you can't. Yeah. You don't have access to the principal. So you have to live off interest only. Where in the case of the annuity, I think one of the reason people like them is the structure. So you get a piece of the interest each month, but you get a piece of the principal. So it increases the amount that you have access to and can live off of each month.
Okay.
Let's run through the rest. The rest of the $2 million level is 4% rule is $6,600 a month. And the aspirational financial independence gets more interesting here. So you would be able to generate $60,000 a year in cash. And your investment portfolio could appreciate at $80,000 a year.
Yeah, so I think being at $2 million plus is really the only spot where this really seems to kind of make sense.
Yeah, well, where aspirational FI starts to kick in, because you have enough money to basically live decently well. You can definitely live in the West if you want. You can live well in other markets and less developed markets. But if you do this for 10 years, a good chance that your wealth is going to increase from 2 million to 3 million.
I like this. And actually, I will update my number. I know I'm not giving them out yet, but I think this is my number. This is what I'm trying to be at, is the 2 million aspirational. And I'm actually kind of doing this now, even though I have less than half of that. And I'm doing that by cutting my expenses down by half. You know, and this is also where I disagree with our last guest. Is I think it's a great idea to save 70% of your income, as long as you're not, you know, hating your life, right? Like, I'm still enjoying my life. I'm just living somewhere that's cheaper than, you know, being in Miami or something or New York. Because if I was there, I wouldn't have anything to invest. But being out here, I can still invest half my money and hit aspirational, you know, FI. I can get to the $2 million range. Not that, you know, without working a 9-to-5 job and you know, with all the stress that comes with that, or starting a business or something.
And good thing with 2 million is it then makes the upper levels much more accessible. Because if you're at 1 million and you just go off, you know, the grid and retire, it's hard to get to 2 million. But if you're at 2 million, it becomes much easier to get to 4 million, because you have enough money that you can live off of, and your investment should be doubling over the course of 10 years, or close to doubling, right?
Yeah, I agree. This is where it really starts to look interesting, I think.
All right, Derek, why don't you take the next level up?
All right, so if you go from 2 to 5, now we're talking about some nice income. Just straight cash, spend down, put it in the bank, $9,200 a month, if you put that divided by 45 years. Lifetime annuity, over double again, almost $250,000 a year you're making at this point, just about $20,000 per month. And if you break it down to the 4% rule, still a nice income, $200,000 a year. That equates to close to $17,000 a month. Mm-hmm. And if you want to do aspirational financial independence, you could still pay yourself $150,000 a year, which is a nice salary currently. And you could appreciate your assets another $200,000 a year. So after 10 years, you're up to $7.5 million in net worth and still making a six-figure income.
I think that's a good number to be at. Derek, how much can you share how much you spend each month living out in California? Single guy.
I would say between $6,000 and $8,000 a month. So that would cover my income.
$6,000 and $8,000. Yeah. And probably half of that's close to rent, right?
Yeah.
Derek, you spent $8,000 a month living by yourself?
Yeah.
That's insane.
And I don't think I live extravagantly. It's just, wow. Is what it is.
That is wild.
Yeah, but you see how much rent eats up, right?
Yeah, rent is half of that. So
that's wild.
And the other half is American Express.
I definitely don't feel bad splurging for my $400 a month one bedroom out here then.
No, I think that's pretty modest. I think Derek's living pretty modestly. I'd say most people I know, it's probably, six to nine, single person, 6 to 9 in the U.S.
I mean, in a major city, at least. Yeah. In like a top 10 city. I don't think that's extreme. You know, you basically have to have $100,000 income in any city now in the U.S. to survive.
Yeah. When I was in Tampa, I remember it was like I was spending probably 9 to 11, but I had my girlfriend living with me. So it was all like the food costs and stuff where it was kind of double. But yeah, rent, car payment.
That's where it really eats up, like going out, eating, going out for drinks are $20 a piece now. I mean, it adds up quick.
Yeah. All right, that's 5 million. So good thing with 5 million is it opens up. And if you get the 5 million, you can get to 10, right? Just give it time, basically.
Yeah, I mean, if you're doing the aspirational financial independence model, you're getting to 10 real quick.
Yeah, I mean, you could live cheaper, you could invest more aggressively. A good thing with 5 too is like you can weather a few storms, like the market pulls back for a few years. You can also afford to have some losses. Like if you have a $50,000-$100,000 loss, it's like it's not that big of a deal, you know, an investment. You can bail family or friends out. You have unexpected life situations, like you have plenty of cushion there. Okay, so next level up's 10 million. Cash spend down $18,000 a month, lifetime annuity, $40,000 a month. If you just want to put the entire thing into a bunch of policies, you get a $40,000 a month income stream for the rest of your life. 4% rule is a little bit lower, $33,000 a month. Aspirational FI. I think this is kind of like from, let's just say for Western entrepreneurs, I think this is sort of where people start like, yeah, I want to get to 10, 10 to 20, right? And at 10, aspirational FI means you can spend $300,000 a year, or let's say you have income of $300,000 a year, you're gonna have some tax on that. And while you live off that $300,000, your portfolio, at least in this model, would appreciate $400,000 a year, which means by living this way, after 10 years, your wealth would grow from 10 to 15 million.
Well, I think you guys can agree that once we're at this level, I don't think options 1, 2, or 3 make any sense at all. If you're making at least $400,000 a year, why are you not investing at least some of that?
Well, because when you get to this level, you want to feel like you're a millionaire. You want to spend like you're a millionaire and not just have a normal, decent life. This is where you want to start spending, you know, staying at the St. Regis. You want to start, you know, chartering private jets. You want to drive a Rolls Royce. Then, like, why deprive yourself of those nice things? What's the point of being a multimillionaire if you're going to be driving a Kia or, you know, even just like an entry level Mercedes? Or like, why not get the best? Why,
I don't know that living off 300 versus 400 is really going to be that much of a difference, though. You're not going from Kia to Rolls Royce.
Yeah. Well, you think about this. If you have $300,000 in cash, you probably are paying a tax break. Like if that's investment. Okay, let's just say we invested it, like Johnny or my portfolio. Derek, I'm never clear on where you're invested, but you have some fixed income instruments like APH, Pier Street, PPR note. You've got bank CDs. Like all these are taxed at a higher tax bracket. Then you have some like stock dividends and real estate dividends. You probably get a little better rate on that. So maybe you're paying 25% on that $300,000. Mm-hmm. So that would leave you net 200, more or less net of 200 a year, let's say $17,000 a month. Now, $17,000 a month sounds like a lot, but when you get to this level, lifestyle inflation is most likely a real thing. You probably have at least $1 million worth of real estate that's unproductive. Like you have a home in the US and a home in Europe or something like that. So you're not making money on that. And you know, potentially, but also as we discovered in the vacation rental episode, you have costs to go into those, right? You might have, if you have a home in the US that's $800,000, like you easily might have $10,000-$15,000 a year in just maintenance costs, operational costs, right? So that $17,000 a month, it looks like a lot, easily gets chipped away at by lifestyle inflation, flying across the world a few times a year, business class, maintaining properties, spending on good wine. Maybe at this point you start taking care of like, you know, your family or friends or, you know, ex lover a little bit better. You start doing more charity work. So $17,000 can go away pretty quickly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or get spent pretty quickly.
It sounds like, I mean, I'm sure there's people that live near you, Derek, who spend $17,000 a month that don't have any money left over to save or invest.
I mean, easily.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, even at 10 million, that gets you a decent house in LA. That's it.
Well,
so yeah, it depends on where you live.
I mean, if you want it, like, let's say you want to have, if you want to have three properties, you want one in the US, one in Europe, and let's say one in Asia. That's probably more than most people want. Most people would want two, ideally, right? At least one where they live and one probably vacation home that's either nearby or maybe in another country if you're, or like
easy flight
like Johnny and I, right? Yeah. So that realistically, that's almost $2 million. Now you know, Jomtien, we know you can buy a place for 50 grand, but like, all right, if you want a place in any European city or like vacation destination on the Mediterranean, in the Alps, in, you know, wine country, you know, Portugal, you can do $500,000 now. Spain, you can do a decent place for $500,000, but really like $1 million, like in Spain, 800,000 gets you a pretty nice place for a single person, fine, for sure. But if you're like a couple or you have a small family, like, you know, $1 million, you're probably looking at $1 million. Same in the US, same in most places in the West. So you can easily have $2 million in real estate without being like luxurious.
Yeah. Well, I hate to break it, but even in Jomtien, it's like 120 grand starting now for an okay place.
Wow. That's more than I would have thought.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's do the last number, 20 million. Who wants to take it away? Who's getting aspirational?
I'm going to assume this is Sam's aspirational number. I haven't actually.
There's a reason he stopped at this number.
Yeah.
Nothing more to see, folks.
So if and when Sam gets to this number, he's not going to do the cash spend now because I'll just be stupid. I wouldn't let him do that. He'd probably be in all annuities. So that means he would get $79,000 every month for 45 years.
Sam the annuity man by that point.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. If he did the 4% rule, 66 grand a month. But most likely, I don't see Sam ever stopping. You know, even though he could probably just stop right now, he would probably hit the aspirational financial independence still, mm-hmm. and he would spend 33 grand a month and appreciate 800k a year. So almost that, you know, that feels like you're appreciating about $1 million a year. Mm-hmm. Is this actually what you would do, Sam? Do you feel like you would still want to live aspirational financial independence and grow your net worth every year if you hit this number? Or would you say, you know what, I'm done. I don't care if I ever make more money again. Let me just enjoy my life.
It's really difficult to say. It really is. I can tell you, like, since I've been an adult, I've never liked to see my balance go down. Mm-hmm. And I imagine wherever you're at, it would feel the same because you'll always justify like why more makes sense, right? Like even if you're way mm-hmm. beyond what you need and your family needs and the like maybe the organizations that you're close to need, you can always justify like, hey, as long as I'm not killing myself to get more, like if it's just passively growing, why would I say no? That would be foolish, right? You know, if it's just in a pretty simple investment portfolio and it's growing each year, why would I not take that? Because you can always justify like, I'll just do more for charity. Simple. Boom. So I don't see like making a decision to purposefully not grow it just to like super simplify. And to Johnny's point, like if you had 20 million and you put it all in like insurance policies, that would probably give you more stress than if you had it invested like across 10, 15 different investment and asset classes, right? Because mm-hmm. yeah, what if a bunch of those go bankrupt or stop paying for some reason? Like, I don't know. It would feel weird, right? We've spent a lot of time becoming comfortable in investments. And yeah, we've definitely made some mistakes as like the last year has shown. But I think we're at a point now where we could be very smart with investments where they don't cause us that much stress. We know how to ride out market cycles, mm-hmm. et cetera. So yeah, I would still say at this number, and this has always been my number, by the way. And a lot of entrepreneurs that I know, that's like, this is the number. It's pretty easy to see why. It's like, you're busy your whole life as an entrepreneur. You take a lot of risk. Finally, you make it, but you still want to be active. Like you want to be able to give back. So at this level, like you can easily make, you know, a few $100,000, $500,000 a year in startup investments. You can support young entrepreneurs. You can give a few $100,000 a year to charity. And you can live a lifestyle of spending a few $100,000, which at this level, you have a few properties, you take care of some people around you, you want to do a lot with charity. Like you're going to fly business class all the time. You're easily spending $20,000 a month. So, you know, between charity, startup investing, which you have to assume is not going to pay out, and living the lifestyle you want, like you're going to spend probably $500,000 to $1 million a year. And you would want the rest of it to be able to continue to grow or at least maintain a balance, I think.
So on the exact opposite of what Jared said, where it's a sad life to just watch your net worth all day and worry about it going down, I feel like it's the same thing when we just watch it going up. Mm-hmm. And we're always thinking like we want to have more and more and more. It's also the same excitement and a good part. I don't think looking at your portfolio And, you know, calculating these numbers is necessarily a bad thing, mm-hmm. you know, unless it's giving us stress or negative stress. I think it's fun to calculate our numbers. I enjoy doing it every quarter when we do yeah. our quarterly updates. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as long as we're kind of looking at it once every 3 months, I think it's completely fine, whether you're looking at it to grow up or for it to go down. Mm-hmm. I think when people start refreshing it daily on their phone and checking the apps, and that's the first thing they see in the morning, then it's terrible. You know, I actually hate all the investment apps where they show you day change. I don't care what the day change is. Yeah. Show me what the month changes or the year changes, because it's just unnecessary stress to see either, oh, today it's up this much or today's down this much. It's like, I honestly wish all those apps would just get rid of that feature, at least let you choose a different option.
Mm.
So what I thought was, I don't want to ever be at a point in my life where I'm not excited about investing, because I still am. I know you guys have gotten kind of maybe less excited about it over the years, but I always kind of see that as going to be part of my life. I guess if I had to pick a number and I had to retire, the minimum, I would say right now is $2.5 million, because that's going to pay me $100,000 a year on the 4% rule. And I feel like mm-hmm. I need to make a six-figure income. Otherwise, it's just going to be not a fun life. That's not my ideal number, but mm-hmm. I think the minimum has to be $2.5 million. I think I'd feel a lot more comfortable at five, but if I had to retire, I think 2.5. And obviously, hopefully, like I said, I wouldn't ever be fully retired and I'd still have some kind of income coming in, hopefully from something fun, maybe an investment podcast or something like that. And I think that's where my number is right now and hopefully trending upward.
So Derek, if you reached that number today, would you actually still live where you are, or would you move somewhere?
I don't want to live somewhere just for the purpose of saving money. I still like Los Angeles. The weather's perfect. There's a lot of great things about LA. If you read too much media shit about it, it's not all true. There's obviously negatives to it too, but I've lived in other places that are supposed to be amazing, and there's a lot of negative there too. You're going to pull out from a place what you want out of it. And I did fall into that negative trap for a while, I think during like COVID and stuff, because honestly, it did suck here. Really, with a lot of the shutdowns and things like that, where it's kind of taking away your life. But at the same time, you know, I can walk out my door, I'm on the beach, there's cool people around, and there's just, I don't know, it's a different vibe. And but I could probably find that somewhere else. I just don't know where that would be right now.
I agree with
for that sake, I wouldn't want to go as extreme as like Johnny and just picking somewhere cheap on the map and like Googling what's the 10 cheapest countries in the world.
Where can you live off $800 a month?
Yeah.
No, what you said about investing, it raises a good point, something I've been thinking about the last couple of weeks, because on Johnny and on the quarterly updates with Johnny, I was like, I'm just out of investing and I just want a few simple things. And what I realized is like life is really like seasons, you know, you have all types of different seasons in life. Right now, I'm just kind of in this winter where I want to really slow everything down and hibernate for a bit. But it's also like, it's because I was living in sort of a polar opposite of like too much activity, too much like new investing activity, et cetera. Right. So this is just like the cycle of the season. But even on weekends now, I'm like, man, I want to check my accounts. I want some financial news, and everything shuts down on the weekends for the most part. Right. It gets quiet. Mm-hmm. Markets shut down. And
that's why I hated crypto, because it was 24/7 nonstop. It was too much.
You know, but like some of my startups, everything goes quiet on the weekends. It's nice to have like a little bit of activity, right? Follow and stuff. So I think I'll come out of this kind of winter season consolidating my portfolio, and then I'll want to get back into some interesting investing. But right now I'm still just, I got to quiet things down and consolidate, because it got too messy, especially last year with like Pier Street and Yield Street and Colt Wines and APH, Johnny's APH. We both had some crypto losses and stuff. Mm-hmm. It was a wake-up call for sure.
So the last few days I've been hanging out with American guy. He's mid-30s, he's retired, and he's getting a VA benefits. He gets $4,333 a month, which is what, I guess, 50 grand a year or something.
Yep.
And he's gonna get this for the rest of his life with a bonus for inflation every year. Mm. He was the most carefree guy I've met in a long time. Like, he just, everywhere we went, he just spent the most, buying girls drinks, you know, just splashing out, having the best time of his life. And then at dinner yesterday, he couldn't pay the bill for Indian food. So he told his friend, I thought he was joking, he said to his friend, I'll Venmo you on the first.
Oh no, he already spent his whole.
Jeez.
And I thought he was joking. And he's like, no, I have like 10 cents in my bank account left.
Oh, he's literally embodying Die with Zero.
Yeah. But he doesn't care because he's like, you know what? On the first, I'm gonna get my $4,000 and I'm gonna enjoy life again. And I never have to worry about it. I was kind of jealous.
Yeah. There's something to be said about that right there. Well, that's considered a pensioner, right?
Yeah, that would be.
Yeah, basically.
There's how many pensioners are there like living across like the Mediterranean, Thailand, you know, just like that.
A lot of them.
Exactly. Yeah.
A lot of them.
Just like that.
I actually think, like, we actually came up with this question last night. I asked him, I did the calculation. I said, would you rather have $1.93 million right now, or $2 million right now, or keep your $4,000, $300 a month for the next, until you die? And he made the mistake of saying, give me the $2 million now. I'll invest it. I'll make more than that. I said, knowing your personality, do not ever do that.
This is why lottery winners go broke. You can take the 20, 30 year option, or you can take the big lump sum, and they're like, give me the lump sum, and then it's gone.
Yeah. Well, I think we've realized that, like, if we all went back and lived that lifestyle and we hadn't had more available to live off of, probably like in a split test would be either as happy or more happy to live in a super simplified way like that. But I think as our numbers, as we grow and we have access to more wealth, like, numbers tend to float upwards, right? And what I realize is, like, where I'm at right now is perfect for the lifestyle I want to live and to be able to do what I want to do each year, like to support companies, charity. I'm paying for my ex-girlfriend to have a one-year sabbatical right now. It's like, it's nice to be able to be in a position to do that, right? If I move my number up, like we talked about, 20 million, yeah, like I would take it, I would do it, but I also know it will add more complexity to my life than I have now. Because if you want to donate the surplus to like charity, it's like, that's work. Okay. That's not like, it's easy. You got to vet them. You got to make sure the money goes to the right calls. You got to write the checks. You got to take their calls for additional money down the road. You're kind of on the hook for, there's like pressure there.
And that's a good point. It's kind of a lot of work to give money away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, billionaires like have to hire, they can't give the money away. They have to hire, they have to form organizations because it's the same thing. They don't want to just write blind checks to a big organization. They want to make sure the money gets into the right hands, is deployed properly. Like, they don't want to be scammed. They don't want to deal with the calls from the company to get more money and stuff. So,
well, speaking of putting money in the right hands, why don't you put it in our hands through Patreon? I'm just kidding. But this is one of the benefits. If you're on Patreon, obviously you can see us on here. And if you're not, I think we should do these live episodes more often. This is actually really cool and hopefully a nice benefit for our Patreons. If you do want to sign up, you can go to investlikeaboss.com, click become a Patreon. This episode will stay live forever. So if you want to see our smiling faces, and there'll be a little bit of bonus content on the Patreon side as well.
But wait, we didn't hear Johnny's number.
Oh, you guys know my number already. Derek, what's my number?
Yeah, he was like 2 to 2.5, right?
No, just 2.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just 2. 2. 2 is fine. I'm not greedy. But to be honest, I'll tell you my plan right now, right? I am perfectly happy with never being a net worth millionaire ever again.
Is that why you keep riding the line, Johnny? Because I think you've just been kind of surfing right around it.
Like, every time I get close, because the thing is, I swear to God, once you hit that extra decibel or the extra, comma, you feel like that is the new zero. So if it dips below that, then you feel worthless again. But if you're at like, if you're like 999, then like it goes 998. Nobody, you don't, it doesn't matter. You can go down 100 grand. You don't care. You're like,
there's like the stigma of being labeled a millionaire.
Psychological trap.
Okay.
Yeah. Cause then you have these expectations of yourself. Others have expectations of you, like if Sam didn't have as much money as he did, I wouldn't, never be like, hey, Sam, can you, do you mind, flying me business class out to see you, But now that I know he has so much money, I'm like, Sam, why don't you fly me business class out to see you? That would be nice. You could afford it.
Yeah, the ex gets a trip and not your coworkers here, Sam. Yeah.
I would like to take a year sabbatical. Right?
We know flying business class is overrated. Yeah, but Johnny, you didn't cook for me for 3 years and scratch my back.
Yeah, I'll scratch your back, Sam.
Okay, I make you guys a commitment. I make you and Derek a commitment. If one of my startup,
okay.
I have 3 startups I'm in right now that could pay out significant. Okay.
Okay.
I'll give you guys I'll give you guys something. I'll give you guys a decent chunk, like 5 to 10% of the payout. How about that?
All right. Oh, I
really? Yeah. Okay. We don't want the cash though. We want to use that money for a boys' trip. We're not going to stress about money. I want the call from you, Sam, saying, Johnny, it sold.
Pack your bags.
Make sure the month of July is you're completely free that month. You and Derek, don't worry. Don't bring your wallet. Leave your credit cards at home.
Yeah,
that's what I want to
hear. I like it.
I like it. Someplace quiet with some nice nature. We'll go someplace and meditate for a full week.
Oh no.
Sam's gonna take us to that $20 a week.
Where you gotta lay on the hardwood floor.
I'm gonna fly you guys business class.
A sweep on your knees.
I'm gonna fly you business class to a meditation retreat. See how long you can sit cross legged. Surprise.
Oh god. No, but like seriously, I'm okay with never, you know, crossing the millionaire again, never having that feeling, that stigma, and then just use that money for stuff, you know, like, you know, if I get to a million, I'm like, oh, okay, who in my family needs a new car, you know, who needs to get their bills paid down a little bit, you know, like, what can I do to make myself happier? I think I'll be okay with that. But if I ever want to have a family, then I feel like I do need to get to that 2 million part.
Mm.
So right now, my plan is basically live in the cheapest places that still make me happy. You know, and I think that sounds a bit strange, but I can honestly say without blinders on that I'm happier being here in Jompton by the beach than being in Venice by the beach.
Mm-hmm.
I know arguably Venice is nicer, but I just feel like I'm getting a very, very similar experience here. I like the food. I don't know. Actually, I really like food in LA too, but I don't know. I just feel like I'm getting a very similar experience, but for so much less that it's not worth, like, I feel like if I was spending $30 every time I went out to eat or $20 for drink, I wouldn't enjoy it as much versus here when I feel like I'm getting a deal and I'm still eating delicious food or I'm still having a nice cocktail and I'm still by a beach. I'm like, you know what? I'm content. Like I'm 100% content.
Yeah, fair enough.
It rhymes with that book called Happy Money that we had the author on the show, because it's such a unsaid or unspoken value add. Is like when every time you spend money, if you feel good about it, it's amazing. Because a lot of times we're spending money 5-10 times a day or more, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you go out and you're like, you feel like it's a bad value, you don't enjoy it as much. When you spend money and you feel like it's good value, you enjoy it.
Yeah.
You add that up. It's like 5 or 10 times a day. You feel a little bit better.
Yeah. And here, you know, I love, you know, tipping people because they actually appreciate the tip, you know, versus in LA, it's expected and it's a way higher.
The percentage
amount goes
up all the time. I swear to God, like the minimum is 20 now. It goes like 20, 22, 25.
Oh, God.
And you're like, wait, what?
Yeah. And like, it's not a nice feeling, you know, like when I tip someone, I want to have a good, positive feeling from tipping them. And then I want them to appreciate it. Here, I'm treating people all the time, you know, and a lot of times it's little things, you know, it might be to a fruit shake or just paying for their transport or like a massage, you know, paying for their foot massage. You know, it might be $1, it might be $3, it might be $5, but here people actually they appreciate it. It doesn't cost me anything, you know, like in the long run.
Here it just feels like a service fee you just have to pay no matter what. It's not like a matter of being gratitude. It's just, this is what you have to pay no matter what.
It's I think guys like Kevin, they do it right, where maybe he works too much, but when he's out and he's treating out, you know, the whole table, he's treating all his friends, I think he gets all the joy from that. And you know, I appreciate it because I never would have eaten at that restaurant. You know, that like Isakuma, whatever, you know, Siamese restaurant with like, you know, like, you know, I would never go to a restaurant that has $5 signs. But when I was there, I was like, man, I really enjoy this. Thank you so much for giving me this experience.
Yeah, Kevin's definitely a very generous guy.
So Derek, In-N-Out is on me. I'm back in LA.
I don't think they've raised their prices yet. I feel like they have to. So yeah,
no, that's why I said In-N-Out, not McDonald's.
All right, sounds good, guys. Well, good episode overall.
So let's end this for the public portion, and let's just stay on for 5 minutes and just give the Patreons a little bonus here.
Sure, we can do that. See you later, freebies.
No, we appreciate you as well.
All right, fine.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the Best Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.